90 KVGB and 95.5 FM. Bros Baseball brought to you in part by Gleason Landscaping, Next Tech Wireless, Z's Liquor in Great Bend, and by the American Plains Co-op Bulk Fuel Department. And good morning. Welcome to Fueling Kansas here on 1590 KVGB, 95.5 FM. Our once a month visit with Warren Martin. He's the executive director of Kansas Strong for the promotion of the quality of life created by the oil and natural gas industry in Kansas. Good morning, Warren.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
So what are you doing out on the road today? It's always great you come by and visit with us.
Yeah, we got a great busy day doing this show here. And as soon as I leave here, I'm headed to Fort Hays State University, and we're doing an ag day in the quad there at Fort Hays today.
Is that for college students, or what? How's that work?
Now you're asking questions I don't know okay. the answers to. I just know that I set up a booth and interact okay. with whatever public is there. I think it's predominantly for college students to learn about the ag industry, but I think it's also open to the public. I don't know if they're having local okay. schools come to it or what, but we'll be there for about 2.5 hours from 11 until 1:30, just kind of sharing with people about the importance of the oil and gas industry. And that's really important here in Kansas, because a lot of people don't realize that the oil and gas industry here in Kansas, especially western Kansas, from this point all the way to the Colorado border, many of the counties that are in that portion of the state, their funding is highly dependent upon the oil and gas industry. Even more so, many of the ranchers and farmers that live in the western part of the United States, when they have bad years, when they have droughts, when they have different things, is the oil and gas revenue that comes off of their property that enables them to continue with their operations. So it's been a great partnership between the oil and gas industry and local farmers and ranchers for over 100 years that have enabled a mutual benefit to both industries.
Yeah, that's really evident when you get around budget time for county commissioners, when they're seeing where that oil price will be set for the entire year.
Yeah.
That's kind of important for them.
Yeah, anyone who sets an oil price for the entire year, that's a bad move, first of all.
Exactly, because I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, it was down around 28. That wasn't a good year for county government.
We're a little bit above that right
now. Yeah, let's talk about oil price. It's been an interesting week and a half with things in the Middle East. And would volatility be a good way to describe it right now?
Really, ironically, you'd think my answer would be yes, but the answer is actually no.
Really?
Because Middle East volatility, what we've seen in historic perspective, when something like what's going on in the Middle East right now, you had a little bit of a bump in the oil price when Iran attacked Israel. Mm-hmm. And so when that bump took place and Iran attacked Israel, there was a lot of speculation that, Israel is going to respond. The question is, do they respond by attacking the proxies, or do they respond by attacking Iran? And so oil prices surged way to the high. And at that point in time, Israel decided to go ahead and attack Iran. But what's interesting is they did not attack any oil and gas infrastructure in Iran. And I have to believe, this is just me thinking outside the box here, thinking on my own, this is not any official position in any way, shape, or form, but that it was the Biden administration that pressured them not to attack any of the oil and gas infrastructure in Iran. New sanctions have been put on Iran, but it's been clear that the Biden administration is not going to enforce those sanctions. Same time, funding for Ukraine was just passed. But as part of passing that, for Biden to be able to sign off on it, he went to the Ukrainian government and said, we'll pass this off. You can go after Russia however you want. Just do not attack their oil and gas facilities. So I don't know if you realize this or not, but we're in an election year.
And, you think? And Biden, you know, you're sharp as a tack, Warren.
And Biden is doing everything that he can to ensure that gas prices stay as low as they possibly can through the election season. But all of these chickens are going to come home to roost at some point, and it'll probably, if it doesn't come home to roost by force before the election, it's definitely going to come home to roost after the election, And that election is going to determine how we, how America really responds to it.
Iran is, when you think of oil producing, you think of Saudi Arabia, right? Where's Iran in oil, oil reserves, and overall in the world?
So you got OPEC Plus, and OPEC Plus is the predominant. And everyone thinks of Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is not really a major producer of oil. They're just the major producer of oil that's in OPEC. They're in the top five.
Okay, okay.
But the United States is the number one producer of oil in the world. Mm-hmm. We produce more than any other country. But you take Saudi Arabia, OPEC, or excuse me, Saudi Arabia, Russia, and then you combine it with the other 22 countries that are in OPEC Plus that Saudi Arabia controls, or I won't say controls because we've seen some, we've seen some division that has taken place in there, but they certainly have influence over everybody that's in OPEC Plus. So Saudi Arabia really becomes influential more because of the control they have over 25-plus nations that are in OPEC Plus rather than what they actually produce themselves. And so they have continued to initiate voluntary cuts trying to push up oil prices. They want oil prices to be around $100 a barrel. Why? Because it's not a free market over there. Whatever oil comes in as, that goes straight to the royalty that's in Saudi Arabia. And so they don't care how much oil they sell. They just want to sell it at a high price so that they have less cost and are able to pocket more money for that royal family.
How's anyone tell Iran what to do?
No one tells Iran what to do. And so going back, I realized I didn't answer your question. Iran, really, where they fit into that equation is in producing that oil. You hear them referred to often as the state, the world's biggest state sponsor of terrorism.
Yes.
And part of that is the oil and gas industry. And so there are sanctions that are being put on by the United States government on Iran are impacting Iran being able to be a part of the free market world. And instead, Iran is finding, as they've always done, finding ways to sell it to Russia or predominantly sell it to China to get their oil out of the country so that they can get around these sanctions. And so the sanctions against Iran really aren't going to do any good unless we go after their infrastructure.
China is a big customer of Iran. How is that oil delivered? Is there, knowing the Middle East geography there, there's not a pipeline going underneath the mountains, or how do they get it to
China? No, there's pipelines that go down to the Gulf,
okay,
to the Indian Ocean there, and then it's shipped around to China where it needs to go. China has its own production that's there, but they can't produce enough to provide for the population that they have within their own country. And so China is a big consumer from the United States, big consumer of Iran, big consumer of Russia. China is pulling oil in from anywhere they can possibly get oil in because they are growing so fast and they're so desperate for energy. They're buying it up from anywhere they possibly can.
Where does Iran get their technology for their oil production and their energy needs? Does that come from Russia?
No, they have a lot of partnerships with other countries in the Middle East.
Okay.
And so almost all of the countries in the Middle East are oil-producing nations.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't take much to get a petroleum engineer from Egypt or someone.
Okay.
You pay them enough money, they'll come and they'll give you that technology. So in developing it, the oil and gas industry, while we have become, and the reason you ask that question is because here in the United States, we have become a super technical industry where a lot of people that work in the industry, they don't even understand what happens in the entire cycle of drilling a well, putting it online, and bringing it into flow. They don't understand all the components that go into that because we have become so technical. And we become technical in efforts to reduce our environmental impact to where we have the best air quality that we've had in the United States since before the 1970s. I mean, we have done a phenomenal job. At the same time that we became the largest producer of oil and gas in the world, we became one of the leading nations in cutting greenhouse emissions. When you go overseas, what you have to remember is that the oil and gas industry that started here in Kansas was simple tools. I mean, these people were, a lot of the people that were exploring in the field, they were building their own tools in their own shops. and going out and doing cable drilling and drilling. And, you know, it got refined over time. But it doesn't take a lot of technology to go drill an oil well. It really doesn't. But it takes a lot of technology to drill an oil well without having a massive environmental impact. And so what you're seeing is you don't have to have that high technicality to be able to produce oil in Iran as long as you don't care about the environment. But here in the United States, we are highly technical because we do care about the environment. We've done a better job than any other country in addressing environmental concerns.
Okay, Warren Martin with us, Executive Director of Kansas Strong. Let's take it back here. We'll may jump back across overseas. We'll see what's going on. Significant things going on in Kansas right now, legislation concerning oil and gas?
Well, the biggest thing for us right now is the methane regulations that are being passed down by the EPA. The EPA finally released their methane regulations, and those methane regulations require the monitoring of methane at every wellhead, every pipeline, every tank battery, every single place that oil goes here in the state of Kansas, which means that you have to buy extremely expensive monitoring equipment to go out and monitor this. And if your methane levels get too high, then you have to pay a tax on those methane levels based on how much methane that is expended. Now, all sounds good. Because we all want the environment to be the best that it can possibly be. However, we already had studies, the multi-state studies that were done, that have shown that marginal wells, which is the entire state of Kansas, the average well in Kansas produces 2.5 barrels a day. So the entire state of Kansas is in the marginal well category, that they produce virtually no methane to no methane. I mean, we don't produce that much methane. But it's an extenuating cost to be able to monitor something that has been shown not to be a problem. And the EPA is moving forward with these regulations. The danger is because we're marginal wells, that means that we work in the margins. We decide which wells to plug and which wells to continue operating based on can we get the oil out of the ground and still make a profit on it on the slimmest of margins at 2.5 barrels a day. And in those marginal wells, you add this extra cost of continual monitoring of every single wellhead, every single tank battery, every single pipeline. It's literally an existential threat to the Kansas oil and gas oil industry. And if fully implemented the way the EPA wants to implement it, it would push the entire industry out of business in the state of Kansas. And you just think about the economic impact that would be. And so, you know, you have 26 states right now that have sued the federal government over these regulations. It is going to come down to a court case. It's going to come down to who gets elected in the next presidential election. You know, all of those things are factors that are going into there. But I think all of that's weighing on Kansas oil and gas producers. And you add to that the increased cost for labor, the increased cost for supplies, the supply chain issues that are taking place, which makes it harder to get funding to be able to put in new wells. You add all those things together, what we're experiencing in Kansas right now is a little bit of a slowdown, where we're down about 14% on our production from this time last year. And really that methane regulations are hovering over us. They're a real dark cloud over our industry right now.
When is the date that is supposed to go into effect?
It has already gone into effect.
Okay,
so as you know how the federal government works, the taxes are already in effect. The monitoring is not. So, in other words, we're going to start taxing you on January 1st, but we're not going to start monitoring until we figure out exactly how to do the monitoring. And once we figure out how to do the monitoring, we're going to backtrack. So it's possible, and this is where that danger comes in, it's possible that it could take the next year and a half, 2 years for them to figure out how to do the proper monitoring, and then them backdate all the way to January of this year and say, you owe taxes all the way back through January before because we monitored it, and here's how much methane y'all released, and so here's how much taxes you owe for the past 2 years. And so, you know, that's another real hurdle for us to figure out how do we navigate that.
Okay, when you're down 14% as far as activity in Kansas, does that affect the job force?
It's a job force. It's affecting the
Okay.
Down, so if more we, so than the other way around.
I mean, because you always, when you know, there's a slowdown, obviously some workers have to be, you know, let go, which you lose that trained workforce. Yeah. And then when you ramp it back up, then you're having to train another.
Yeah. This is a slowdown of different proportions than we've seen in a very, very, very long time,
really?
Maybe ever. And, you know, most slowdowns are caused by market factors. And the price of oil drops, you know, consumption drops off like we saw in the pandemic. You know, you have something like that that really changes the dynamic. This is different. And the way that it's different is even though the oil and gas industry is paying the highest prices we've ever paid before for jobs out in the field especially, but for all jobs, we're paying the highest prices we've ever paid before, we still have a labor shortage. And so we have a lot of drilling companies right now that are running two drilling rigs, and they have one crew that's jumping from one rig to the next.
Wow.
And they would be happy to be able to get both rigs going at the same time. And that would certainly amp up our production because there's slowdowns all the way across the board, and certainly labor shortages are a big portion of that. We need more people in the oil and gas industry. That's why Kansas Strong launched our job board. And so if you go to kansasstrong.com, look in the top right-hand corner, and you'll see available jobs. You can see a lot of great available jobs that are there, and we're adding more on a weekly basis. So if you're looking for a job, if you're looking for a way to maybe up your pay grade, take a look at that at our website at kansasstrong.com.
How does Kansas Strong address the work shortage and finding more available, you know, qualified workers?
Well,
to fill some of these jobs.
Through extraordinary voice talents like yourself that get us on the air and help us encourage people to go down to our website and encourage it. And that's really what we are. We don't represent any specific company or anything like that. Our goal is to educate people about the oil and gas industry, and part of that education is educating people about the jobs that are available in the oil and gas industry. So that's a natural fruition out of that. So it's not really part of our ultimate mission as an organization.
Mm-hmm, sure.
It's kind of an offshoot of this helps fulfill our mission. And so we try and get on the radio. We're on, I think, 26 radio stations around the state. And every time I speak, every time I talk, I encourage people to go take a look at that job board and take a look at the jobs that are available in the industry, because we definitely need more workers in the industry right now.
Warren Martin with us, Executive Director of Kansas Strong. So we are in election season. As a oil and gas industry, how can you plan for things when, okay, a new administration may put the reins on EPA just a little bit?
Yeah.
You know, okay, so for the oil and gas industry, that would probably be really good, but then you get in the next cycle and you come around and, you know, maybe drilling regulations on different areas are being relaxed, and then you make plans to go in there and start exploring that area, and then another election comes along, and then all of a sudden they restrict it. How?
Yep.
You know, it changes every 4 years, and I would think, how do you plan for that as an industry?
I think that best analogy I can give to you is think of two boxers in the ring. That's like asking, how do you plan for the next hit?
Yeah.
You have no idea where it's coming from. You know, you know the boxer, you know what their tendencies are, you know where they tend to go, but you really can't predict what the next hit is. You just have to be prepared to take it. And that's really what Kansas has learned through all the ups and downs in the oil industry, the last one being COVID and what happened through COVID when oil went to minus $37 a barrel. You know, no one could see that punch coming. And really what it comes down to is developing your company here in Kansas in such a way that when those punches come, when those down cycles come, you're able to temper the tide and be able to come out on top and have enough diversification, enough saved up to be able to make it through that time to get to the next boom that is on the other side of it. And that's really the way the oil and gas industry works. It's big, it's high risk, high reward. You risk big, you get rewarded big. And but the industry as a whole has learned how to risk big without risking everything.
Like in 1982.
Yeah, you don't want to go all in.
Yeah.
And really it's that diversification. Add to that, here in Kansas, we have a unique scenario where most of the Kansas oil and gas producers live here in Kansas. they live in the communities they're working in. They hunt the same fields. They go to the same churches, go to the same restaurants. You know, the average oil company here in Kansas is 3 employees. So we live here in the community. And you know as well as I do, living in a small community, how much people are vested in ensuring the continuance of their community. And so that really gives to that resilience as well, as these producers are building their companies, they're building it in such a way that they're able to take those punches, but able to also to make it through to the next golden moment in their business.
It looks like it's going to be a Biden-Trump election coming up in November. Now,
you sure about that?
Who knows? I mean, there's some people I'd like to see running, but no, they're on football committees and stuff like that. So assuming that's what it is, okay, we've seen what Biden's energy policy has been, okay? Now, we do have a track record on Donald Trump's administration, on his, I guess, plans for oil and gas and exploration and things like that. So how big of an election is this?
For the oil and gas industry, this is a huge election. And I'm gonna take a stab. Is it Condoleezza Rice that you're talking
yes,
about?
Yes, it is.
Okay, I figured that.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Except football selection committee.
Yeah, let's get her on. Yeah, okay. Yeah,
and so, you know, there's a lot of things that are going. I mean, who knows what's gonna happen with this court case and what the ramifications of that are? Who knows what's gonna happen with Joe Biden and and, you know, just what's going on in the Democratic Party. You got a lot of people in the Democratic Party that are not exactly in line with where he's going. So where this election goes, I have no idea.
Yeah.
I have absolutely no idea. But what I do know is it is a hugely significant election for the oil and gas industry. A little known secret is Democrats actually generally help the oil and gas industry more than Republicans do. Because they go in and they try and tighten the screws down, and that inevitably raises oil prices, which hurts the consumer, but it certainly helps oil companies.
And really? Okay.
Because the price of oil goes up, and the same people are doing the same. So generally, when a Democrat is elected as president of the United States, the oil industry does really well the first 4 years that they're in office. It's the second 4 years that really hurt the oil and gas industry, because that's generally, you know, they're not up for re-election again. They don't care, and that's when they put the screws on the oil and gas industry and really began to turn it down. So there's positives and negatives no matter which party gets elected, but this is a different election. This is a different election than historic elections, because you really have, there's kind of an electoral spirit. You have this pendulum that's swinging where, you know, you had Bill Clinton that came in, and then you had George W. Bush, and then you had, you know, you go kind of go through the whole thing, Obama and Trump. And the pendulum just kept swinging wider and wider from the right to the
right.
Left. And so I don't think it really matters who gets elected. It's going to be a significant impact on the oil and gas industry as a whole, and especially because there will be the there'll be the commander-in-chief, not only of the military, but the commander-in-chief of the EPA. And
correct.
That is That's where the significance really comes in. As to which commander-in-chief do you really want to be in charge of the EPA?
Very well said. I should have said that way. The commander-in-chief of the EPA, which I know why they're there. I mean, it's good, but it just sometimes it. We're out here in the middle. It doesn't. What
it's one of those things where if you're a hammer, everything you see is a nail.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the problem with the EPA is when you have the EPA. The EPA is a great organization that has done a lot of great good. We have the best air quality we've ever had before. Emissions are on a downward trend across the board in the United States. We do a better job producing oil and gas here in the United States than any other country on earth. There's no question about that. We do it at the absolute best. However, when you work for the Environmental Protection Agency, you work for the EPA, your whole goal is to protect the environment. And it's kind of like taking care of your kids and how do you provide the best lifestyle for your kids. As a parent, you know, no matter what you do for your kids, you know you could have done better, no matter what. And you do better, and then when you do better, you know you could have done even better. And that's kind of where we get into with the EPA, that the EPA in and of itself, their goal is to ensure that the climate, that the environment never changes. That's their goal, is to make sure there's no environmental change. Well, the environment is going to change. And so that's where you have to have that government voice that's outside of the EPA that says, okay, we know what your goal is, we know what you want to do, but there's limits. There's limits because you're now crossing over to the point where you're taking care of the environment to the expense of the population. And the population is a part of the environment. And that's really the great tragedy, is the people are never seen as part of the environment.
No.
They're always seen as the parasite that's destroying the environment. But we're as much a part of the environment of the world as anything else on Earth. And we need those voices that are able to come in and control the EPA and say, look, the environment includes the people, and your regulations, what you're trying to do is now hurting the people.
Yeah, because very well said. That's why we have Warren Martin in here, Fueling Kansas. And I had a lot of good stuff here, but we're getting toward the end. But so what could happen on the first day a new president's in office, or what has happened in the past, with one stroke of a pen, an executive order?
Yeah.
So what has happened in the past and what could happen with the new administration?
Well, what's happened in the past, you had Trump that came in. He immediately struck down a bunch of EPA laws on the first, or not laws, EPA regulations on the first day, restarted the Keystone XL pipeline. You had Biden that came in his first day.
Yeah.
He canceled the Keystone XL pipeline. And what the problem with that is don't expect Trump to come back in and say, okay, I'm going to restart the Keystone XL pipeline. Trump's only got 4 years, and that's kind of the downside of it. He's only got 4 years. So a project like the Keystone Pipeline, a project like drilling in the Arctic or some of those other things, they're much longer than a four-year plan.
Correct.
And so it's going to be really hard to get oil and gas companies to commit to reinitiating those programs because it's going to be hard to raise money for them for the first cost. And second, you know, you could spend several billion dollars getting a program started that the next president that comes in could cancel in a heartbeat. So I really think what we're looking for in the oil and gas industry is, if a Republican were elected to the Oval Office, then what we would be looking for is we'd be looking for stabilization, especially if it was Trump that was elected. Just roll back some of these regulations and just stabilize things where they're at, more so than growing and expanding, because he's only got 4 years. Now, a lot of that's going to come down to June when Trump picks his running mate, and depending on who his running mate is, you know, if people are really excited about the running mate that he picks, they may be willing to take that risk and say, yeah, we'll reinitiate a pipeline project, we'll reinitiate drilling in the Arctic, we'll reinitiate drilling on federal lands. We'll take a longer look at this because we're really excited about your running mate that's there, because that gives them the potentiality beyond that first 4 years.
I've never understood executive orders.
I think they're completely outside the Constitution, in my own opinion.
Well, I know,
but they are what they are.
And thus, then we have stalemate. Okay.
Yes.
All right. You took these away. I'm going to put them back in. And then, okay, 4 years later, okay, you had those in. I'm glad. It was a calming voice of
Warren
Martin.
It's a way to keep the lawyers employed. You know, with all the jobs that we've lost over the years, we definitely don't want to lose any more lawyers. So, you know, by filing executive orders and then suing to overturn them in courts, that keeps a lot of lawyers employed. And, you know, but if you want a better job, then come to Kansas Strong and check out at kansasstrong.com. Check out our job board, because we got better jobs in the oil industry. And you don't even have to worry about
politics. Have a good trip to Hayes. Okay.